Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
That is trauma. Dr. Mary Bar-Halpern is a clinical psychologist, a trauma and extremism expert. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. How are you? Oh, Dr. Mary, can you hear us? That is strange because I can see that you're there. You don't have us on mute by any chance. All right, we are going to get Dr. Mary back because I'm greatly looking forward to having that. Oh, there we go. I think you might be there might have been something wrong there with the line. Can you hear us now? No. All right, we are going to get Dr. Mary back. If you could maybe assist in this conversation, how do you think that we have changed? How have you changed? Whether you are a Jewish listener of ours, whether you're a non-Jewish listener of ours, the world has certainly changed in many, many ways. What are your experiences? What are your positive experiences? What are your negative experiences? And really, what does that mean? Let's see. Let's try see if Dr. Mary is there. Dr. Mary Bar-Halpern, can you hear us?
Yes, now I can hear you. Thank you for having me.
A great, great pleasure. You're dealing with this level of trauma every single day. And I would imagine all the way from can you hear us? Oh. I'm not sure if there's some interference with this line. Let's give it one more chance and then we'll call you back. If not, Dr. Mary? Yes, now we can hear you. Perfect.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear us? No. All right, we're going to get to you. We are going to get you back. I was asking you, our listener, what your experience has been. Dov says she's having a traumatic introduction. Yes, sometimes it can be. So one of the incidents that I came across and that I found was a number of colleagues and friends, Jewish friends, said, you know, they were quite upset that people hadn't messaged them and hadn't asked them how they were doing following October the 7th. And it's also about a global perspective, because the example that I used was if there was an incident where a number of Catholics had tragically died or been killed somewhere in South America, would we think of reaching out to our Catholic friends and saying, are you okay? And the answer is generally not. So that being the case, should we have that same expectation on others? Dr. Mary, let's try that again. We haven't had much joy here. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi. Sorry for all the interruption. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thank you for that. The level of trauma obviously differs, whether it's somebody who was caught up directly in October 7th, who has a family who is part of Israeli society. And as we move further out to those of us Jews who are supportive of Israel, who live in the diaspora, we all have a form of trauma following October the 7th. We're not the same people that we were. In what way, what connects us all in terms of even though at those different levels of trauma? What is a thread that you see running through us?
Well, one of the thread is our shared intergenerational trauma. We're talking about epigenetic and the transmission of trauma through generation. So October 7th sits on a trauma network that belongs to our ancestor as well. And I think part of the Jewish identity is that we see ourselves as connected. There's this song in Hebrew, like Ma'enushit Achat Chaya. We're all one connected tissue. So the problem with October 7th was that we all saw ourselves as it could have been us. And just as right now, with all the anti-Semitic incidents that are happening around the world, each one of us see ourselves as one of those people, as one of those victims.
So that, you know, earlier I was referring to even my late grandparents who were Holocaust survivors, and they had quite a, in a way, negative view of the world. They were very positive. They rebuilt lives. They created legacies, but they remained very skeptical their whole life around what it means to be a Jew in a hostile world. And growing up as their grandchildren, we would look at them with a bit of disbelief, thinking, why would you be, that's not the same world. But in many ways now, it's proven to us that it is the same world. So we've almost reverted to the words of our grandparents.
100%. I mean, I'm a third generation Holocaust survivor. My dad is a psychiatrist who specializes in Holocaust survivor and second generation. Those are the stories I've heard from my grandparents. I was that young girl traveling to Europe and was told, don't speak Hebrew in the streets and hide your Star of David. And I found myself saying exactly the same things to my nine-year-old son right now in New York. I think that what happened is when something happens, when there is a trauma, it creates a scar, and it's an invisible scar, but it doesn't go away. So you're always, when you can heal from it, but you're always going to have that sign. You're always going to have a mark on you that once in a while, it's going to show up again. You're going to notice it again. And I think right now we're living in that era where that scar is very visible.
How do we deal with it?
Well, first, we name it. I think part of the problem, part of my research about traumatic invalidation is about naming it. What Jews are going through right now is that not just the trauma that happened on October 7th and all the attacks on Jews. It's also the fact that the community is not acknowledging that. So it's creating a compound effect on the trauma. And when the society, your community, is not recognizing your pain, then you can't really move forward and heal. So the first thing is to name it and have other people name it for us and acknowledge our pain and acknowledge our grief as well. The second part is we have to stick together and to also have allies with us. We need to rely on community. We need to build again that sense of belonging. This is part of post-traumatic growth. It's also giving meaning to experiences. And right now, we need to figure out a way to stay hopeful. I think one of the really interesting research that I've read recently is about how the Israeli people are actually super hopeful in general, and are continuing to be one of the happiest people in the world, which, you know, when I read it, I was like, this doesn't even make sense. This is insane to me. But when you dig deeper, I think this is in our blood. This is why we're not just resilient. We're not just bouncing back after trauma. We are growing every time in the face of trauma, and we're becoming a better version of ourselves every time.
Is it because Israelis are choosing to be happy?
I think so. I think it's part of a survival mechanism. It's part of, you will not break my spirit. We will not let them win. We have to continue to grow. I think there's always a choice. You know, one of the books that I read that really changed my view of the world is The Choice by Dr. Edith.
Yes. Yeah.
And she says in the book, we cannot choose to vanish the dark, but we can choose to kindle the light. And I think what we're doing is trying to kindle the light by going out, by staying alive, by celebrating moments alongside with the grief. I think that's the dialectic, is being able to have both at the same time, is being able to really dive into the sadness and the trauma, and at the same time, be hopeful and hold to the life.
I always wonder about the expectation of those around us, not from within our community or maybe within our society, but not our community. Many people have often said to me, people haven't reached out. They haven't after October 7th. They didn't check in to see how we're doing. And I appreciate that. But at the same time, I said to them, and I just told listeners this example earlier, if there was, God forbid, a tragedy where a whole number of Catholics were died or were killed in South America, would you reach out to your Catholic friends in South Africa and say, I'm thinking of you at this time? And I think it's unlikely because society amongst Catholics isn't necessarily structured in the same way. But that doesn't mean that they understand and appreciate how we are structured.
I think this is a little bit different. Will I reach out to every single person? No. But would I reach out to my friends if I know they're affected? Absolutely. Would I check in with my patients that are affected? Absolutely. I think it's part of, for me, it's part of my profession, but it's also part of being a human being. Mm. So, you know, I think that, again, it comes back to humanizing people and not seeing them as a problem. But what's happening is not only that people are not reaching out, they're denying it. And that's the part that is hurting. There is the silence, right? There is the silence, but there's also the protesting against and telling us that we're victimizing ourselves and even justifying some of the attacks. So it goes deeper than just not of just being quiet, basically.
It's quite interesting because there were a number of Israeli runners who came to South Africa to run an ultra marathon, and they were harassed by some of the some anti-Israel protesters. And the comments that I'm getting a lot on Facebook is, well, then, what we do we need to feel sorry for them while they murder babies in Gaza? And exactly the comment that you made, you guys are always the victims. What about the babies in Gaza? And it's so interesting because that is, I mean, you don't use the word gaslighting in your, in the article I read, but it is that, and it is completely negating any form of pain and discomfort that Jews experience.
Exactly. So it makes it almost like a hierarchy of pain, a competition, who is suffering more. And the problem with that, it is aboutism, that it's creating a problem not just for Jews, by the way. I mean, yes, we're suffering right now from the mental health aspect of the trauma. But when you start looking at people with this very one-sided narrative, when it's us versus them, then all people are actually more exposed to vulnerability, to propaganda and extremism. That's what extremist groups are based on, is getting that us versus them narrative, the oppressed versus the oppressor. And right now, what we're seeing in basically all over the world is the rise of extremism.
And that is, of course, the most dangerous, one of the most dangerous aspects. We do need to leave it there, unfortunately. Just a pity because of the timing. It is 8:33. I'd love your thoughts, your reaction. That was Dr. Mary Beil-Halpern, who is a clinical psychologist and trauma extremism expert.